The Assassin.
You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest. You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest.
What up, y'all? You're listening to Sports Talk with Trop, and I'm your host, Katie Trop. Well, man, these NBA playoffs, we have some great matchups that have just taken shape this past week. There are, of course, a couple of the other matchups that are looking like they're going to be sweeps and end in this weekend. So we'll see what happens. But let's get started with recapping the entire week of NBA first round playoffs, beginning with game two. Between the Philadelphia 76ers and the Brooklyn Nets. In game two, the Philadelphia 76ers absolutely dominated the Brooklyn Nets. It wasn't even close. And, there's one player for the Philadelphia 76ers who I expected to break out this season and really kind of be that guy outside of Embiid and James Harden who really ends up stepping up and making an impact on this team. Unfortunately, he was injured for a lot of the first half of the regular season, then kind of started to get it going in the second half of the regular season, and now here he is, and that is Tyrese Maxey. This guy drops 33 fucking points and just goes off. I mean, he had a fantastic not only did he have a fantastic game two, but we'll be talking about him in game three, too, once I recap that one. But since we're talking about game two, he dropped 33 points and just was really that guy. Now, Joel Embiid also had a great game, too. He had 20 points and 19 rebounds, so he went for a double-double. And it was just an absolute domination from the 76ers. They won game two 96-84 and would go up 2-0. And then last night, they actually had game three, which ended up being a lot more interesting than the first two games. Brooklyn actually looked like they were going to steal one, but then about 5 minutes left in the fourth quarter, the 76ers really started to put it on, and Tyrese Maxey was that dude. He knocked down a couple of really key shots in the fourth quarter. Joel Embiid had the game-winning block, basically, in the fourth quarter as well. And the 76ers would end up getting the win 102-97, and they are now up 3-0 on the Brooklyn Nets. They probably are going to knock them out in the game four, which is going to be Saturday night. Just really the way the 76ers have dominated the Nets, I didn't think it was going to be close. I expected this to be a sweep. And so far, that's what it's looking like. But as I said, Tyrese Maxey had the big game these last two games. He dropped 25 points last night. Joel Embiid, he didn't have quite the dominating game he's been having, but he still had a double-double, 14 points, 10 rebounds. Like I said, had the big block at the end of the game there to basically seal the deal for the Philadelphia 76ers, and a real close one. But game four, Saturday night, I'm expecting a sweep in this one. Then moving on to the Sacramento Kings, Golden State Warriors matchup. We've had two games in this one. We had game two was in Sacramento again. This was a close one. Not as close as game one, but it was still a close one. Trading barbs back and forth. As a matter of fact, in this one, Draymond Green would end up getting ejected because he would stomp on Domantas Sabonis's chest in the fourth quarter. Sacramento would go on and win this game 114-106. They would go up 2-0 in this series. De'Aaron Fox has really just had a phenomenal series so far. In game two, he had 24 points, 9 assists, and 5 rebounds. And then Sabonis also had 24 points and 9 rebounds. And the Kings really, they pretty much led the charge in that matchup. But then game three was just last night. And Draymond Green actually did end up getting suspended for last night's game. So he did not play last night, but it actually did not matter. The Warriors finally got a win in this series, 114-97. And it was really all about Steph Curry He dropped 36 points and just had a fantastic game. I mean, really, the entire Golden State Warriors team really stepped up with no Draymond Green. The Kings still had a good game. You know, De'Aaron Fox had a solid game as well. It's just they didn't win this one. So right now, the Kings are up 2-1 in this series. Game four is on Sunday. Then moving on to the Boston Celtics and the Atlanta Hawks series. That is going as expected. Boston absolutely obliterated them in game two earlier in the week. They won 119-106. Jason Tatum, he is continuing to have just a solid, great standout season. He dropped 29 points, 10 rebounds, and had 6 assists. And it's really just been straight domination by Boston. I'm expecting a sweep in this one as well. And game three is tonight. Then moving on to the Cleveland Cavaliers-New York Knicks matchup. In game two, man, Cleveland really bounced back hard in this one. They just led the charge. They got the win 107-90, tied up this series. And it was weird because, you know, the Knicks have pretty much been able to, even if they're losing a game, they're able to stay in it. Well, this game, it was not close in any way, shape, or form at any point. And Darius Garland, welcome to the playoffs, dude. He dropped 32 points and 7 assists. And Donovan Mitchell had a double-double with 17 points and 13 assists. And so this is now a series. Game three is tonight, so we'll see what happens in that one. But this has been just as good of a series as I expected. Then moving on to the Phoenix Suns-Clippers series. Earlier in the week, the Phoenix Suns bounced back, had a really, really good game. You know, they do have the pieces to win a championship. It's just, can they put it together? And so far, these last two games this week, the Phoenix Suns have showed they could put it together. Game two, they won 123-109. Devin Booker dropped 38 points, 9 assists. Kevin Durant, 25 points. DeAndre Ayton, 14 points, 13 rebounds. So they ended up tying the series in game two. And it's just because all around, you know, like I said, Booker dropped 38 points and he just went off. But Kevin Durant was right there to help him out. And Ayton was right there in the paint. And Chris Paul out there still dishing the ball. So just a great team effort from the Phoenix Suns in game two. And then in game three, we actually did not have Kawhi Leonard. He was out with an yet again. Have you heard this? Have you heard this one before? Kawhi Leonard was out with an injury last night, and you gotta kind of look at it and go, it might have cost them a win last night because the Phoenix Suns got a close win, 129-124 in game three. Now Phoenix is up 2-1 on the Clippers heading into game four, which is on Saturday. And it really just is these core four guys, they are really starting to play great. Devin Booker had 45 points last night. Kevin Durant had 28 points last night. Ayton was also a huge factor. Chris Paul was also a huge factor. And they're really putting together a really solid run right now against a pretty decent Clippers team. And we'll see what happens the rest of the series. But we've got a really, really good matchup here between those two teams. Then moving on to the Memphis Grizzlies and the Los Angeles Lakers. There was no Ja Morant in game two, and it turned out to be no freaking problem for the Memphis Grizzlies. They absolutely kicked the crap out of the Lakers, 103-93. Series is now tied up, headed into game three, which is tomorrow, Saturday night. And the Lakers should have easily, you know, they won game one pretty easily, and that was with Ja Morant. No Ja Morant, and the entire Memphis Grizzlies team just really stepped up, played great defensively. They just played great, and they whooped that trick. If you don't know what that means, you should watch yourself a Memphis Grizzlies game, because one of the most hilarious things that I personally love about a Memphis Grizzlies home game in particular is when they win, they play that song, "Whoop That Trick." And I just think it's hilarious just because, I mean, I'm surprised somebody hasn't complained about it because that's not nice to be talking about whooping the trick. But I think it's hilarious to hear them chant that at the end of the game, especially when they do whoop on the Lakers like they did. And the Lakers should have won that one, but they did not. And so here we come into game three, tied at one. We do have a pretty decent looking series, but I don't expect much from the Los Angeles Lakers, because if they can't win without Ja Morant in, their best player. How the fuck are they going to win this series? And I know it's hilarious to me that everybody thinks that the Lakers should be favored in this series. I don't fucking think so. But they could still win it, of course. And I, of course, am rooting for them to win it. But realistically, this team ain't winning a championship, even if they win this series. Then moving on to the Milwaukee Bucks and the Miami Heat series. Game two was earlier in the week, and Giannis missed the game due to that back injury he suffered, but it didn't matter. The Bucks got the win, 138-122, tied up the series, and they really just dominated. Brooke Lopez stepped up, had 25 points. Jrue Holiday also stepped up, had 24 points, 11 assists. And it really was just an all-around great team effort from the Bucks. And it was also typical Miami Heat where they just have an up game and a down game. And so that's just how they play. So it wasn't shocking to see that happen. And game three is going to be Saturday. And then moving on to the Denver Nuggets, Minnesota Timberwolves matchup. It's going as expected as well. The Denver Nuggets stomped the Timberwolves 122-113. They're up 2-0 in the series. Game three is tonight. Nikola Jokic, he just had another solid game as he always does. 27 points, 9 assists, 9 rebounds. But Jamal Murray is turning out to be that dude. I said when this series started, somebody else has to step it up besides Jokic. And Jamal Murray dropped 40 points in game two. So he seems to be that dude who's going to step it up. As I said, game three is tonight. So we'll see what happens in the rest of these series. But I kind of feel like once we get to Monday's show, there might be one or two of these series that are completely done. And they'll be sitting back waiting on their next opponent in the semifinals. And then the last bit of NBA news is Nick Nurse was fired today as the Toronto Raptors head coach. Those rumblings have been basically percolating the last couple of months of the season. Even though they made the playoffs, it was still, they were still talking about it, and now it has finally happened. So we'll see who ends up filling that position. I kind of feel like it's a pretty good coaching job to take, because they do have some pretty good players up there that you could build around. It's just the team was never really able to put it together since they lost Kawhi a few years ago. But I think the Raptors have a lot of potential, but Nick Nurse just couldn't really get the guys to listen to him. So he was fired today. Now moving on to the week of baseball, we had quite a few things happen this week, beginning on Monday when the Chicago Cubs went off on the Oakland A's. They had 20 hits in a 10-1 win over the Oakland A's. Patrick Wisdom has just been having a great season so far. He had 2 home runs in this game, and he's actually setting a Chicago Cubs record by having 8 home runs in 15 of his first games as a Chicago Cubs. So he's having a great season so far. And then Cody Bellinger, they picked him up in the offseason. He played for the Dodgers. He did have his heyday, but the last couple of seasons have been a struggle for Bellinger, and he really hasn't stepped it up. Well, he had 5 hits in this game, and he seems to be a hidden gem so far for the Chicago Cubs. So he had 5 hits, which was a big deal. And a big win for the Chicago Cubs. Then on Tuesday night, Clayton Kershaw, the starting pitcher of the Los Angeles Dodgers, he's been one of the best pitchers of this era, hands down. And once again, he proved it by getting his 200th win versus a 5-0 win over the New York Mets. And that says a lot, because, of course, he would get his 200th win in a shutout just because that's how Clayton does. Kershaw's, as I said, he's been one of the greatest pitchers of this era, right up there with Verlander and Scherzer. And he just keeps adding to it with that 200th win. So congratulations to Clayton Kershaw. And as you know, that's really difficult for me to congratulate a Los Angeles Dodger since I am a San Francisco Giants fan. But you gotta show respect when accolades like that are made, especially in a big win like that for the Dodgers. Even though they still are not at the top of the division, the freaking Arizona Diamondbacks, still number one in the National League West. Don't know what the fuck's going on there, but it's pretty hilarious to see, because none of us could have predicted that the Arizona Diamondbacks would be one of the best teams in the National League right now. Then on Wednesday, This week, it was a big week between the New York Yankees and the Los Angeles Angels, really just because it's Aaron Judge versus Shohei Ohtani, two of the top players in the league. So that's a huge draw for Major League Baseball right now. And on Wednesday, they played a really solid game, but Aaron Judge got the better of Ohtani in this game. He had a huge catch. He robbed a home run from Ohtani. One-handed grab, basically. And then he also hit a home run in this game. But it was actually Gleyber Torres who had the game-winning sac fly to get the win for the Yankees against the Angels 3-2. Then the other bit of baseball news this week is Max Scherzer has been suspended for 10 games. Let's see, today is Friday. So, yeah, and the announcement of the suspension was yesterday. So Wednesday, when Max Scherzer was pitching, a couple of years ago, they started having the umpires inspect the pitcher's glove and hands after every inning that they come out of the game. And Scherzer, you know, walks up to the umpire, and the umpire's kind of feeling his hands and the glove, and he tells him, "You need to get a new glove and wash your hands off." And he's like, okay, yeah, I gotcha. That's fine. He's like, "It's just rosin in my sweat." And you could tell it's a hot day in Los Angeles, and Scherzer was sweating like a motherfucker, so it made sense. Goes back, apparently, you know, washes his hands in alcohol and gets everything off of his hands. Goes back out to pitch, and then a couple innings later, he's getting checked. And all of a sudden, the umpire's telling him he's got too much on his hands again. And they start arguing back and forth. And he's like, "Dude, it's just rosin." And he ends up getting ejected. And now he's serving a 10-game suspension because the rule in Major League Baseball, if you are removed from a game due to having a sticky substance on your hand, you're just immediately suspended 10 games automatically. That's just the rules. And so he has now been suspended 10 games. It's just really odd it was just a really odd thing to see because, you know, Max Scherzer has never really been accused of cheating or using anything other than rosin. And he even said it after he was the first time he was inspected and told to wash his hands and everything. He's like, "How stupid do you think I would be to like use something other than rosin and the sweat on my back after I was just told to change my glove and all that? How stupid would I be?" And I totally believe him. It was just a very weird interaction. And you kind of look at it and you go, Major League Baseball kind of, I feel like, needs to, it's fine if they keep this rule in place, but I feel like they need, they have other people there who kind of are in charge of those type of rules. And I feel like they kind of need to take that out of the umpire's hands and maybe have another person, like a person who works for Major League Baseball who just kind of specializes in that area to handle the ejection and kind of figure out, is this a foreign substance or is this just rosin or whatever the issue is? Because actually earlier in the weekend, there was an issue with the New York Yankees and their pitcher. And the same thing happened where it was probably his rosin and sweat that created the sticky substance. And they were ejected. So if that can't be a theme for the entire year, and it also can't just be on the umpires because it sounds like it's a very ticky-tacky, on-the-spot type of call. And so I feel like it needs to be taken out of the umpires' hands, especially with all these new rules that are in place this year. The umpires already have a lot on their plate. I kind of feel like Major League Baseball kind of needs to take it out of the umpire hands, have another person who works for Major League Baseball, have them inspect the hands of the pitchers and their gloves after each inning and have them decide it, but also set some better parameters because that's ridiculous. I mean, if rosin's approved, as it should be, because pitching would be horrible if they didn't have rosin and didn't have some type of grip on the ball as they're pitching. It would be bad. We would have awful baseball if they weren't able to grip the ball properly, and they need to. So there needs to be some better rule or something better for Major League Baseball because we can't be missing great pitchers like Max Scherzer, even though he's not having a great season so far. But we can't be missing him for 10 games. That's just ridiculous. And then the last bit of baseball news, it's been announced that The Oakland A's are officially going to be moving to Las Vegas. It's been in the rumblings for about three-ish years now because the A's have been trying to get a new stadium. Now, coincidentally, earlier in the week as I was writing down my notes for what I'm going to discuss on today's show, I did find a hilarious story that I wanted to bring up on the show, and then they announced that the A's are moving to Vegas, so it just ties in what I was going to discuss. But over the last 5, maybe even 10 years, the A's have been trying to get a new stadium in Oakland. And this has been an issue with the city of Oakland for many years. I mean, as you know, the Golden State Warriors, they had issues trying to get a stadium in Oakland, and they were unable to do that. And so now they are in San Francisco. They made a brand new stadium in San Francisco. So the Golden State Warriors are now based out of San Francisco. Then the Oakland Raiders, they were trying to get a new stadium deal. Didn't happen. So they ended up moving to Las Vegas. And now here we are with the Oakland A's. Same issue. They've wanted a new stadium as well, and they need a new stadium. And the city of Oakland doesn't want to give them a new stadium. And so over the past like 3 years, it's been obvious that the A's are going to move to Vegas. Well, it's official. They have now bought land in Las Vegas. We don't know when they're going to officially move to Vegas, but they have purchased the land. They are moving to Vegas eventually at some point, and they need to, because this is a story why they obviously need a new stadium. It's ridiculous when we have these teams making a lot of money, and it's just teams should have good stadiums, at least decent stadiums. The Oakland A's stadium has been a laughingstock for many, many, many years. I mean, there's been multiple times where sewage is spilling out onto the field of play. They've had to cancel a couple games mid-game because sewage is spilling out into the dugout or onto the field like piss and shit. Not just water, like actual things you can't be in, or else you're going to get sick and maybe die. So I found this hilarious story because it just adds to all the follies of this horrible stadium in Oakland. There is a possum infestation at the Oakland A's stadium. And there is a particular possum that has been bothering the entire stadium since last year. Yeah, last baseball season. And in particular, it really enjoys the rival broadcast booth. So it's actually kind of funny that this possum is obviously an A's fan because it likes to mess with the rival broadcast booth. But they have actually been unable to broadcast from the rival broadcast booth because it's shit is all over the place. It stinks. It's just not a safe environment for anybody to be in. So that's how bad this stadium is, that they have a possum infestation and they haven't been able to take care of it. They've tried getting rid of this possum, but it's like a cockroach. You just can't get rid of the stupid thing. So obviously the Oakland A's need a new stadium, and they've had it, so they're moving to Vegas. And I gotta say, good fucking riddance, because as a person, if you don't know, I was born in San Jose, California, and I lived there till I was about 5, and then I grew up in Reno, Nevada. So, and I've had family live in the Bay Area, and I've traveled back and forth to the Bay Area many times in my life, so I have actual real opinions on the Bay Area. Because I've been there many times. I've explored these places many times. And here's my opinion on the city of Oakland. It's a shithole. It's not shocking that, there are stadiums where shitholes, because it's an absolute ugly cesspool of crap. I mean, in my opinion, the whole Bay Area has turned into a complete shithole. I have no interest in ever visiting that shithole ever again because it's, gross, disgusting. And I've seen the absolute decline over the, like, man, the last time I went to San Francisco, I believe it was like 2004, maybe 2005, and it was for a San Francisco Giants game, and I remember walking around the city and saying to myself, I am never coming back to this ugly, disgusting cesspool ever again, because it was that bad that long ago. That was like 19 freaking years ago, okay? So I can imagine what a shithole it is now. So good riddance, Oakland. You don't deserve any sports teams. Obviously, they didn't want them because they kept voting down new stadiums, which that's your prerogative if that's what you want to do. But who the hell wants to be in Oakland? It's a shithole. It's ugly. It's gross. And I have no interest in ever going back to that shithole or anywhere near that fucking shithole. So I don't blame any of the teams who have said peace out, sayonara to that shithole. I mean, I love Vegas. Vegas is fantastic. Vegas is fun. It's no state tax. It's just, it's great. I like Vegas. Hated Reno, by the way, which is funny, but it's because it's snowy and dumb and white trash and very, very methy. Don't visit the Bay Area. Don't visit Reno, in my opinions, but visit Vegas. So that's why all the teams are moving to Vegas, because Oakland fucking sucks. But anyways, I digress. Let's get today's Trop 5 list. Since next week is the NFL draft, I decided today's list is going to be the Trop 5 biggest NFL draft busts. Because there are very notable ones. They're usually pretty easy to call. My number one is not the typical number one, just because I think there's too much focus on one aspect of it, other than I just don't think he deserves to be number one, even though a lot of people put him at number one. But we'll get there when we get there. So let's start off with number five on my Trop 5 biggest NFL draft busts, and that would be Brian Bosworth. If you do not remember Brian Bosworth, now I was only like two when he played, so I don't really remember him, but I know about him because I love the history of football, and he was a badass college football player. He was drafted in the 1987 supplemental draft, which they still have. When you're drafted in the supplemental draft, that's not good. And he was drafted by the Seattle Seahawks, and he was Oklahoma Sooner, which. But if I'm giving you credit as being a good player from Oklahoma, that must say a lot about you, because I fucking hate Oklahoma as a Texas Longhorns fan. But this guy was a beast linebacker when he played for Oklahoma. He was a two-time Butkus Award winner. He won the national championship in 1985. He was a two-time All-American, and he was expected to be like the next best linebacker. He was kind of like, they were talking about him in like Lawrence Taylor type territory, like really talking him up. But unfortunately, he had a lot of issues with the NCAA. He just would go back and forth with them. I can't recall what exactly were the issues, but basically this guy started to become a pariah while he was in college. He even wrote to all the NFL teams, "Don't even bother drafting me," which is like, what? And then so he did end up getting drafted in the supplemental draft. His rookie season wasn't horrible, but especially because he made the all-rookie team, but after that, he just went downhill. He only spent three seasons in the NFL, and then he retired due to shoulder injuries, and he just really never panned out as being the type of linebacker that everybody expected. I mean, you expect a guy who dominated college football at linebacker the way he did to at least have a semi-decent career, and he didn't. Here are his NFL career stats. 4 sacks, 3 fumble recoveries. That is it for the career of Brian Bosworth. And that's why he is on my biggest NFL draft bust list, because there were high expectations for this dude. And even though he tried to basically sabotage his own career by telling everybody, "Don't draft me," and just had all those issues with the NCAA and whatever else was going on, this dude came to the NFL, was a crappy player, and then lasted only 3 seasons with those whack-ass stats. And now you can see him in Dr. Pepper commercials, so congrats to you. Then at number 4 on my Trop 5 biggest NFL draft busts, I have Tony Mandarich. He was the 2nd overall pick in the 1989 draft by the Green Bay Packers. He played for Michigan State. He actually, before the draft, was on the cover of Sports Illustrated, and they put, and I quote, "the best offensive line prospect ever." And this is really one of the biggest draft busts ever. It's every draft, you basically hear about this guy. Just because he never panned out. And not only did he never pan out, but he was drafted. So in the 1989 draft, this is one of the greatest drafts of all time. Number one was my favorite player of all time, Troy Aikman. Number two was Tony Mandarich by the Green Bay Packers. Number three, Barry Sanders by the Detroit Lions, one of the greatest running backs of all time, Hall of Famer. Aikman, Hall of Famer, too. Then at number four, the Kansas City Chiefs took Derek Thomas, linebacker, Hall of Famer, fantastic linebacker. And then number five was Deion Sanders by the Atlanta Falcons, one of the greatest cornerbacks of all time, Hall of Famer. So he went alongside those guys. And he only lasted four seasons in the NFL, and his career never panned out. He basically had a horrible attitude. He got addicted to drugs, would eventually have a shoulder injury, and he would just retire after four seasons and would never, ever, ever even pan out to be the best offensive line prospect ever. And he absolutely needed to make this list. Then at number five on my top five biggest NFL draft busts, number three on my top five biggest NFL draft busts, Johnny Manziel. He was the 22nd pick in the first round of the 2014 NFL draft by the Cleveland Browns. He went to Texas A&M. Now, this guy had a great year in 2012. Two seasons before he was drafted. He won the Heisman Trophy. He threw for 3,706 yards, 1,410 rushing yards, and 47 touchdowns. And he did. He took over college football that year. 2012 was the year of Johnny Manziel. 2013 was a good year, but it wasn't as phenomenal as 2012. So then hit the NFL draft. He, of course, everybody is looking at him as one of the top quarterback prospects. But there were a lot of red flags. He was a small guy. He didn't really have those great of intangibles, those great quarterback skills. And he didn't look like he had a ceiling at all. He looked pretty overrated. He looked like most Heisman Trophy winners, especially at quarterback, who hit the NFL. Just you're great in college, and then you hit the NFL, and you're just a bust. It happens more often than not, a Heisman Trophy winner does not pan out as a great NFL quarterback. So it's not shocking that he ended up being one of the biggest busts. But part of the reason why he's one of the biggest busts in NFL history is because he only lasted two seasons. And listen to these career stats. Now, I just told you what he did his Heisman Trophy year. I'm just going to repeat those stats so you can hear the disparity between his two NFL season career stats compared to his Heisman Trophy one-year stats, okay? 2012, Texas A&M, Heisman Trophy year. He threw for 3,706 yards. In his two seasons as an NFL quarterback, he threw for 1,675 career yards, okay? Then, in his 2012 season, Heisman Trophy year, he threw for 47 touchdowns. 47. His career touchdowns in two NFL seasons, seven touchdowns. This guy was awful. And it's not just because he played for Cleveland, because obviously if you play for the Browns, lots of times you're playing for a shitty-ass team. Nah. Johnny Manziel was an overrated sack of crap garbage, and he should have never been picked in the first round. He probably should have never been picked ever. And really, his entire career now, it's like he had two seasons in the NFL. He's one of those guys who's he's played in Canada. He's played in those like UFLs and all those random football leagues. And it just never works out in any of them. So, and just with all the hype, I mean, there were some people when he was drafted who actually thought this guy was going to be the savior for the Browns. They actually thought, I think it was Skip Bayless who actually said he's going to be bigger than LeBron in Cleveland. Yeah, how'd that go? So that's why Johnny Manziel not only made the list, but he is at number three. All right, at number two on my top five biggest NFL draft busts, I have Ryan Leaf. Everybody wants to put him at number one, but in my personal opinion, the only reason why people consider him as such a big bust is because he was in the same draft with Peyton Manning. So he was selected second overall by the San Diego Chargers in the 1998 NFL draft. Now, this year, the 1998 draft, it was basically, who are you taking? Who are the Colts taking? Peyton Manning, Ryan Leaf. Peyton Manning, Ryan Leaf. Now, obviously, in hindsight, Peyton Manning worked out for the Colts. Really, he worked out for the Broncos. He's one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time. Hands down, no question. Absolutely. But Ryan Leaf, while he was highly sought after out of Washington State, and he had great upside, great skills. What the fuck did he do? He didn't really do much in college. Yes, he had good stats, but he wasn't like this, oh my God, great, fantastic guy you want. Like Johnny Manziel, like I said, won the Heisman Trophy. Ryan Leaf did not win the Heisman Trophy. As a matter of fact, didn't Manning win the Heisman Trophy? I could be wrong about that, but regardless, Ryan Leaf was a huge prospect, but I feel like everybody wants to put him at number one as the biggest bust of all time just because it was between him and Manning. And that's my theory on that. But basically, Ryan Leaf was a total bust. Because he was highly sought after. He did have a good, solid arm. But the problem is he just had poor behavior right off the bat. He missed the rookie camp, which is like, what? How do you miss rookie camp? As a rookie, you should be at every motherfucking thing. And this dude was not. He just had poor behavior. He got into arguments and fights with the media. Then he would eventually just get hooked on drugs and just have this really up and down, not only career, but life. His NFL career would only last 4 seasons, which is also bust territory. And so, yeah, Ryan Leaf, definitely one of the biggest NFL draft busts of all time. But he did not make my number one. My number one, top five, on my top five biggest NFL draft busts of all time is Jamarcus Russell. He was selected first overall by the Oakland Raiders in 2007. That's one part of the reason why I put him at number one, because really, you were selected first overall. That means something. And the Oakland Raiders, they actually did move up to get him. And the hilarious thing is, too, that I believe Josh McDaniels was the coach at the time. And I can't remember who their GM was. That guy who played for the Lions. Matt Millen. He was their GM at the time. And both of them did not want Jamarcus Russell. So Jamarcus Russell, he played quarterback for LSU. And man, the dude had a cannon of an arm. I even remember this draft. And I thought for sure he was going to be the next, like, Dante Culpepper. If you remember, Dante Culpepper had his heydays. Yes, his career pretty much careened into the earth the last, like, few seasons of his career, but Dante Culpepper had some amazing years and just had a cannon of an arm. And Jamarcus Russell reminded me of Dante Culpepper, and that's what I thought he was going to be. I thought he was going to come into the league with this cannon arm and just be great. But unfortunately, that's not what happened. So the Raiders moved up to get him in the draft first overall. Al Davis was alive at this time. And McDaniels and Millen did not want Jamarcus Russell because there were a lot of red flags with his personality. He kind of seemed like an asshole, had a big ego, and wasn't really going to work hard. Well, turns out that was right. And Al Davis was wrong. But at this time, this was very senile Al Davis. If you remember around this time, he really did a lot of stupid things to kind of run the Raiders into the ground. But, I mean, Al Davis should not be remembered for that because Al Davis is one of the reasons why the NFL exists today. So he made some great moves in his past, but towards the end of his life, he did not make some good moves. And this is probably one of the worst moves he ever made in his entire career. Now, the 2006 season for Jamarcus Russell was amazing. He was one of the best quarterbacks in the league that year. He threw for 3,129 yards, 28 touchdowns. He was the Manning Award winner. He won a whole bunch of awards that year. He just was the most sought-after dude. But the problem was, a lot of people talked about his work ethic. So he gets drafted by the Raiders, and what happens right off the bat? He has an issue with his contract. He holds out to start his NFL career, and that never panned out for him at all. He would end up only lasting 3 seasons in the NFL. After his holdout, he just would start the season off poorly. He had a poor work ethic. He never completed more than 60% of his passes in those three seasons that he played. The Raiders, I believe, I can't remember if they just outright released him or just traded him. But Jamarcus Russell, in my opinion, is the biggest NFL draft bust of all time because he was picked first overall. But also, he was a fantastic talent. But unfortunately, he was that dude who was a great talent but didn't want to work hard. And that's what that's why you marvel. I know we're not talking about Tom Brady, but that's why you marvel at guys like Tom Brady. You know, he's the greatest of all time because he's the opposite of somebody like Jamarcus Russell. You know, Tom Brady was selected sixth round, and he was a backup, wasn't even really expected to be anything, but he just kept working hard. And even when he became a Super Bowl champion every year, he knew he had to work hard and continue to work hard. Because if you don't have good work ethic and you're not, if you don't make yourself a worthwhile player, you get replaced real fucking quick. And it's happened numerous points throughout the NFL. I mean, there's so many guys who have lost their starting positions just due to injury. But if you have a poor work ethic, you are not going to last in the NFL. And so that's why Jamarcus Russell is number one overall to me, because he was a great talent, and I feel like if he would have just even put in half of an effort that a Peyton Manning or a Tom Brady put in, he could have at least been pretty decent. And instead, he only lasted three seasons in the NFL and has gone down in NFL history as one of the biggest laughing stocks ever. So that is my top five biggest NFL draft busts. The NFL draft is on next Thursday, so we will finally have a little bit of football to discuss coming up. So yeah, enjoy the great weekend of NBA playoffs and baseball, and I will talk to you fools on Monday.